Government Affairs update from ACEC for Friday, March 26th, 2021. A lot's been happening in Washington on infrastructure. Now that the COVID-19 stimulus bill is out, we've been saying that everyone's attention is going to be turning to infrastructure, and it is indeed happening. Particularly in the House. In the Senate, there has been some activity. We've seen Susan Collins come out with an editorial about what an infrastructure package could look like. We've seen some rumblings from leaders in the Senate about how they're going to set their sights on infrastructure. In the House, there's been actual movement on some legislation, and both on service transportation and water. And to discuss all this, we have Matt Reifer joining us. Of course, Matt is our transportation guru in advocacy. And Matt, I'm very happy to have you on the program today. What is happening on infrastructure on the Hill?
Yeah, Jeff, thanks. And it's great to be with you. You're right. There's a lot of activity going on. You know, you mentioned the COVID relief bill, what they're calling the American Rescue Plan, that $1.9 trillion fiscal relief package. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't note that there was some infrastructure funding for our transportation and other state and local clients in that measure. There was upwards of $30 billion for our transit agency clients, $8 billion for airports, $1.7 billion for Amtrak, on top of, you know, a broad-based relief package for state and local governments, to mostly directed to operational expenses and backfilling lost revenue. But you know, the expectation is and the hope is that that will relieve some of that budget pressure that those institutions have been facing. And they'll be able to resume or continue with their capital plans, because as we all know, long-term capital is the first thing to come off, you know, when you're looking at budget cuts. So we were supportive of that package, eager to see that money flow out to our clients and see how that plays out. And we'll continue to communicate with our members as that funding is dispersed in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because there was that funding in there for state and local governments, transit, airports. There's also a cap, capital expenditure or capital projects program in there that was tied directly into COVID response, helping states that are already working on programs for remote education, remote health monitoring, and remote work. So that was in there as well. And of course, you know, for transit, especially since it was relying so much on, you know, dwindling farebox revenue, having those operational plus ups really help. So I believe we sent out a Tuesday letter from our CEO that covered that a little bit earlier this week. And look back in your email and check that out. You know, again, that was great to see. And it really clears the plate right now. That was the big test. That was the first test of the new Congress. And now we move over to the next big target.
Yeah. And all along the plan had been this 1-2 punch, where you do a sort of near-term fiscal relief approach that's done. And now the follow-on package is going to be looking at long-term economic recovery. And this has been the agenda since the beginning of the year for the administration and for congressional leaders. And we're very bullish that this will be an infrastructure-based economic recovery initiative and agenda. And as you indicated, some things have been happening recently in this space. Some components of that package are starting to come together and be introduced. The Transportation Infrastructure Committee introduced a bipartisan water infrastructure bill to authorize over $50 billion over 5 years for clean water infrastructure, $40 billion for the State Revolving Loan Fund, which has been the principal financing mechanism for water infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure projects, but a number of other grants too, to bolster and diversify clean water infrastructure. And we supported this bill when it was introduced last year. We are supporting it again this year, and we expect that that will be one component on the water side of this infrastructure agenda. Conversely, the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House introduced a $300 billion clean energy and infrastructure package that included $51 billion for drinking water programs, the drinking water SRF. The jurisdiction in the House is a little tricky. It gets split between those two committees, drinking water and wastewater. But again, water infrastructure, which is a big market sector for our industry, obviously, is going to be a significant component of this infrastructure agenda. And then on the Senate side, the Environment and Public Works Committee is working on a water infrastructure package. They held a hearing recently on community needs and the benefits of those investments. And the chairman, Tom Carper from Delaware, indicated that we should see a bill out of the Senate committee in the coming weeks on water.
So a lot of movement on water, and that's important. I mean, the revolving fund was something that we were focused on last year as a policy priority, and it's good to see that it's been reintroduced this year. You see both clean water and wastewater taking shape, and you can start seeing now the building blocks of that larger infrastructure package, starting with water. And again, like you noted, you know, that's that cross-jurisdictional matter with T&I and energy and commerce in the House, wastewater versus clean water. You know, that was an issue during the Flint water crisis, of course, who was going to have jurisdiction over that. But you see that building block, you know, start to take shape. What else has been going on the surface side?
Yeah, the other component obviously is going to be surface transportation. The FAST Act, the authorization program for highway and transit and rail programs expires in September. So there's an alignment between the need to reauthorize federal surface transportation investments and this heavy emphasis and focus on infrastructure investments. So we expect transportation to be really the backbone and centerpiece of this infrastructure initiative and investment. Again, going back to the Senate, the Environment and Public Works Committee, they're targeting Memorial Day for committee action on a transportation bill. They are currently collecting priorities and submissions from Senate offices and reviewing those and starting to sort of put the pieces of that bill together, again, targeting Memorial Day for a markup. And then on the House, the T&I committee has also said they like to move something under regular order by springtime. They had a hearing with Secretary Buttigieg to get the administration's priorities. You know, we expect them to work from their Build Back Better campaign and have a very heavy emphasis on responding to and adapting to the impact of climate change and addressing equity and social justice issues in the transportation and infrastructure sector. So I think that'll be two areas of focus for the administration and look to congressional committees to sort of flesh that out and put the pieces together on that bill.
Yeah, perfect timing for our legislative summit and convention that's happening next month. And again, maybe a little bit of a timely plug there, because early bird registration for that event stops today. So you can save money and get your spot for this virtual event where we will be covering all of the issues in depth. Matt, Steve, Catherine, and the team will be providing their usual congressional issues briefing. We'll also be having a congressional panel to talk about these larger issues. So perfect timing if the committees are looking at starting to get things fleshed out by Memorial Day, you know, starting our advocacy effort combined on infrastructure next month is perfect timing. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. There'll be a very good alignment between those visits and that outreach and the briefings that we have in conjunction with the convention. You know, and I should point out, obviously, yeah, from the ACEC National Lobbyist perspective, the advocacy team has been closely engaged with congressional offices and with the committee staffs on what our priorities are going to be as we go into this. But as we always say, you know, nothing beats hearing from constituents, constituent businesses, industry leaders talking about what's important to them, what's important to the local economy, and how this infrastructure package is going to benefit the industry and the public. So yeah, hearing from our members in those visits on what we're working on, what they're working on locally, and how these bills will benefit them is hugely important.
Absolutely. So there's one other issue that's out there, and I guess we'll kind of end the update with this, because it's not clear exactly how this is going to take shape, but something that, Chairman Schuster was a big fan of was earmarks. When they were ended, we always tried to reverse the House Republican Conference's position on that. Peter DeFazio, as ranking member, was big on earmarks and made multiple statements during hearings about, you know, why aren't we going back and using these things? And then, of course, that carried over into last Congress, where Chairman DeFazio brought it up, and it was rumored that there would be a return to some sort of earmarks. And it looks like right now, the Democratic caucus in the House has softened and has allowing earmarks of some sort on future bills, which could include and should include infrastructure. And then, not to be left out of the conversation, yesterday, the House Republican, actually earlier in the week, or about a week and a half ago, or I forget exactly when, but it was recently, that the House Republican Conference agreed and decided to also allow earmarks of some sort or fashion. Still early to see exactly what's going to happen on this, but, you know, generally, you know, earmarks have gotten a bad name of late because of the Bridge to Nowhere and the fact that it was seen to be overused. But in fact, and the argument is, members of Congress who represent their constituents constitutionally should have the opportunity to direct where their tax dollars are going. And instead of allowing a federal agency in Washington to determine where infrastructure dollars are spent, the argument is that it's best to have those elected members determining that in the best interests of their constituents. And it seems to be going back that direction. So, Matt, just looking forward, you know, how do you see the return of earmarks potentially changing the nature of the infrastructure debate?
That's a good question. My expectation is that it will help smooth passage of these bills and these initiatives because the members will have, you know, skin in the game. And rather than fighting over arcane policies and formulas, if you can draw a direct connection between your vote on a particular piece of legislation and the impact that that's going to have on your district, and if that's a specific project that gets funded, you know, all the better. Because you're right, and you talk to members of Congress, they will say, look, no one knows my district's needs better than I do. I'm in touch with, you know, local leaders. Why am I letting a nameless, faceless bureaucrat, in Washington direct where this funding goes? I have a constitutional responsibility to represent my district and to bring home those dollars for our benefit. So I think it'll help. The committees of jurisdiction, the T&I committee, in the context of infrastructure, and the appropriations committee have started to put out guidelines on this, and it's all very good. You know, in the transportation space, the project has to be on the STIP or the TIP. It has to be, you know, planned already. It has to be in the queue. You have to have local support. The sponsor has to, you know, indicate that this is something that they want funding for. You have to demonstrate that there is local funding commitment, so that the, you know, federal government isn't footing the whole bill. Or you're only partially funding, and then the money just sits on a shelf and can't be used because there's not enough to actually complete the project. You know, just good government transparency, you know, disclosures, those types of things. I mean, that's all going to be very good. And if it's limited and and fully disclosed, then I think the members will be willing to do that, put their name on those projects, and then demonstrate to their constituents what they're bringing home for them and the benefit, the tangible benefit that this bill is going to have on their community.
Yeah, it's that transparency and accountability that needs to be put in there, and it seems like it's going that way. So that's very good, very good news, and hopefully it will help an infrastructure bill make its way to President Biden's desk really before the end of the summer. That's the objective here. And it seems like the momentum is moving it in that direction. So we will have a lot more in the coming weeks for you on infrastructure, especially as we near our convention in late April. And until then, Matt, thank you so much for that very good, thorough update on what's happening in the world of infrastructure. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Lots of work to come, and we're excited.
Yep. We're going to be very busy people, and we enjoy doing it, and we welcome you to help us as our grassroots to convey that message to members of Congress, both in Washington and back home in the district. And again, thank you so much for joining us, and this has been the ACEC Government Affairs Update for Friday, March 26th, 2021. We'll see you again next time.